There. Charlie Musselwhite and John Hammond Jr. at B.B. King's in Manhattan, 8 p.m. Vince Gill will be at the NYCB Theater in Westbury, 8 p.m. Fusion Collective will be at Hennessy's in Huntington. Raul Menon and Cassandra Wilson, 8 and 10:30 p.m. at the Jazz Standard in Manhattan.
This has been today's Concert Billboard. Tune in each day to find out when your favorite performers are appearing in the WUSB broadcast area. The online version of Concert Billboard can be found at WUSB.fm and has an upcoming schedule months ahead so you know what to look forward to. You could also find the WUSB Concert Billboard group on Facebook. Concert Billboard is a service of WUSB 90.1 FM Stony Brook, and thank you for listening.
And this is WUSB Stony Brook. It's 2 minutes after 6 o'clock, time once again for Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. Welcome to the festivities. Oh yeah, it's going to be festive tonight, isn't it? May 1st, the 1st of May, May Day. All that kind of fun stuff. And we've got a few stories related to that, in addition to other things. But I don't know, is anybody else feeling like an intense bout of the blues? Because I sure am. I don't know why. I don't mean the musical blues. I mean just like, wow, no motivation, no inspiration, no feeling of wanting to really do anything, and all the stuff ahead that looks good just doesn't look that interesting. And hard to describe, but you know, I've been there before. I know lots of other people go there quite a bit. And some people are there all the time. And it's just weird how certain things conspire. Maybe because I was sick last week. Maybe this asthma medication I'm taking. Who knows? Maybe it's something in the air. Maybe it's just the people around. Maybe it's just that time of year. I don't know. The human brain and moods and emotions are very strange things. And sometimes it's good to just sort of ride it out, or just study what's going on and realize that, okay, you'll have a different perspective in a couple of days, maybe. I fear that too many people just run for the medicine cabinet whenever anything happens like this. And, you know, in some cases it's appropriate, but in most cases I don't think it is. And you just wind up becoming a slave to other things that wind up controlling your life. And who wants that? Well, some people do want that too, but whatever. So if I sound a little down tonight, it's because I don't know why. It's just, maybe it's premonitions of doom and foreboding and various other things. Like, it does happen, you know? Sometimes you sense these things. Other times, it's just a passing phase. Nobody understands it. And that's sort of comforting, I guess. All right, so what's going on? It's first day of May, and there are all kinds of demonstrations going on all around the world. And there's a big rally going on right now down at Union Square in New York City. And that's not even cheering me up. Why isn't that cheering me up? I don't get it. Well, okay, I'm not there, obviously. I'm here. I'd just bring the whole thing down if I was there. I'm sure of that, so it's better that I'm here. Alone. This whole radio station. With the doors locked and barricaded. Yeah, but all that aside, did you hear the story? This just came out today, of these buffoons who were allegedly planning on blowing up a bridge in Cleveland. Now, okay, this is interesting because, first of all, let's look at the timing of this. It happens. It's revealed on the very day of all these activities involving Occupy Wall Street, and all these people are somehow affiliated with Occupy Wall Street, or in this case, Occupy Cleveland, which, you know, in any context doesn't sound like a good idea, but whatever. These people were involved with the movement in Cleveland in the sense that anybody can get involved with these movements. Anybody can show up and become a part of it. So right away, you have to be a little bit dubious as far as that connection. But the other thing that strikes me is that every time you find somebody who's planning on blowing something up, they always seem to be the dimmest bulbs in the bunch. They don't understand anything. You know? There was a plan to get away, and if they were being chased by cops, you know what their solution was? To throw a bunch of thumbtacks out onto the road in back of them. Because they must have seen that on television somewhere. Trust me, that doesn't work. I haven't tried it, but I'm pretty sure you could throw a bunch of thumbtacks out the back of a car. Most of them are going to wind up facing downwards. I don't know. I'll buy some and try it later, but it's not exactly your sophisticated James Bond worthy type of evil here. It's more like the Olympics of stupid. Now, okay, they planted a confidential FBI source. Now, there are so many confidential FBI sources. I'll bet there are more of those than there are people who are genuinely devoted to doing evil things. which I guess isn't a bad place to be if there are a lot of people out there trying to protect people and property from destruction. Okay, you know, I that's probably a better scenario than having a whole lot of people around who want to blow things up and hurt people. But sometimes you have to wonder, where would these people be were it not for the confidential informants and undercover agents? It seems like they're kind of being goaded down a path. And the reason I say that is because if you look at just the way that their thoughts were coming together, these guys had no clue. They never could have pieced it together without a lot of help. So somehow, somebody overheard somewhere, maybe on a news group, maybe on a Twitter feed, who knows, that somebody was not satisfied with the nonviolent methods of the Occupy Wall Street movement. So perhaps they contacted these people and said, hey, you know, if you're not satisfied, we're not satisfied either. Maybe we can get together and do something about it. Kind of getting them interested that way. And then sort of leading them down a trail and letting them say enough to incriminate themselves, but kind of erasing the whole fact that they never would have had the ability to come up with this on their own. Based on what I've read so far, I just don't see it. I see a lot of naivete, and I see a lot of jingoistic terminology and simplistic solutions, but I don't see a lot in the way of brain activity. The plot involved a confidential FBI source and an undercover agent who sold the group two ready-made improvised explosive devices, according to court documents. Now, these two IEDs resemble genuine C4 explosives, but were, in fact, inert. Now, right away, you know, if you are a bona fide terrorist or somebody who just wants to cause mayhem and destruction, you don't fall for that. You know, you take one and you blow it up someplace to make sure it works. Because how many times have we read these stories about terrorists wanting to blow up the New York City subway system, but they were given fake bombs and they believed they were real? Okay, you know, that sounds like the kind of thing that people who aren't experienced with this would fall for. So where are all the experienced people? How come they're not around blowing things up? Because they could. So maybe that's not the world we live in, not here anyway. Because certainly in other parts of the world, yeah, the people have no problem blowing things up. Because it's a relatively easy thing to do. Mayhem and carnage, not the most difficult goals to achieve, unfortunately. This kind of a story, though, makes it seem like everything is under control and we need more in the way of surveillance. We need more in the way of the government looking out for us and protecting us from ourselves. Because evil people are all around. And it's very hard to read this story and not come to that conclusion. And that's why I kind of felt it's necessary to look at it with a skeptical eye and say, well, maybe it's not this obvious. So anyway, these self-proclaimed anarchists agreed to purchase the IEDs as well as tear gas canisters, gas masks, and ballistic vests for $900 in cash. But the anarchist finances, according to this Christian Science Monitor story, their finances were a bit disorganized. The undercover agents agreed to accept $450 upon delivery with the other half due later. For $900, they could get all of that and blow up a bridge. If it was that cheap, you know, to do all of this... And maybe it is. I don't know. I haven't researched blowing up bridges recently, but if it really is that cheap, things would be blowing up all the time. And if it was that desirable, people would be standing in line. So again, maybe that's not the world we live in. According to a 22-page affidavit, I read the whole thing, read the whole affidavit. I was bored. I think it's item number 27 is worth looking at. They talk about hackers there and how hackers can help them. One person knew a hacker. And that person was going to help keep them anonymous, show them how to send email without being traced, things like that. Enough to put in the minds of the average person the conclusion that hackers are part of the threat, too. They must be stopped. Anonymity must be stopped. Encryption must be stopped. Because look what can happen. So according to this affidavit, the men had participated in various protests and rallies in the past and were seeking ways to turn peaceful demonstrations into riots and violent confrontations with police. Now, once the group was infiltrated by the undercover operative, many of their discussions were recorded by law enforcement. Initially, they discussed knocking illuminated bank signs off tall buildings in downtown Cleveland, but the alleged leader was unsure of how to topple the heavy signs. The purported leader, identified as Douglas Wright, said the signs were the most important part because they need to make sure everyone knows that the action was against corporate America and the financial system, and not just some random acts. Now is the time to start planning, because the Democratic and Republican conventions are approaching, and many politicians will be traveling through Ohio over the spring and summer months. Now, at one strategy session, and these strategy sessions basically, I think, were at Denny's, the group considered attacking a bridge. Such an attacking near the city's corporate district would cause significant financial damage and might force the government to put security on every bridge in America. You know, it's... I could see that happening, too. But who would want that? Who would want to push in that direction? Doesn't really flow. Okay, so we want to make more of a police state. Okay. Yeah, you can probably get there. You can probably get to a police state. Do we declare victory at that point? What's next after this? Anyway, this supposed anarchist had other concerns. He didn't want to give people the wrong impression about anarchists. Certainly going about it the right way. According to the affidavit, he stated that the group didn't want people to think they are terrorists, so they would want to blow up the bridge at night or possibly pretend to be a construction crew and drop orange cones off at each end of the bridge to stop traffic before blowing up the bridge, thus limiting the number of casualties and the potential for killing possible supporters. That's well thought out. Have a construction crew right there in everybody's face that's not really a construction crew saying, okay, hold on while we detonate this bridge. Okay, it's clear now. Clearly not the words of experienced people. The confidential FBI source offered to put the group in contact with a person who might be able to provide useful gear, including potentially C4 military explosives, and that's how the IEDs entered the picture. Now, at one point, group members had second thoughts about the wisdom of blowing up a bridge. One alleged member said he was just throwing out ideas. Brandon Baxter advised he was really thinking that taking out a bridge was a good plan, but he didn't know how the general public would take it, and he didn't think the media would portray that in a good way. Wow, okay, Einstein. Yeah, you know, maybe the media would criticize blowing up a bridge. Maybe the public wouldn't see the benefits of it right away. That is entirely possible. Very keen sense of where things might be. Okay, he's the intellectual part of this group, that's for sure. He advised it would not stop money flowing to the 1% and that blowing up a bridge would just anger the people who take the bridge every day. He suggested a better plan might be to derail a train off a bridge or blow up a gathering of neo-Nazis or members of the Ku Klux Klan. And your term of intellectual leader has expired. Yeah, okay. Meanwhile, Wright suggested driving a car loaded with C4 into a Federal Reserve Bank. Then they talked about attacking a fusion center. Fusion centers are where the federal government assembles Justice Department and Homeland Security information. They also considered dropping explosives from a bridge onto a passing cargo ship. They were up all night brainstorming, coming up with all kinds of cool ideas. At one point, the group considered what might happen if they were arrested. Well, Baxter thought that they would all go to Guantanamo Bay if they got caught. And that's when the plan was devised to prevent capture, throwing tacks out the back of the car if they get into a chase. Yeah, oh boy. I can hardly wait for the movie. This is really incredible battle of wits here. Anyway, eventually the group decided to affix explosive devices to a pillar on the Route 82 Brecksville Northfield High-Level Bridge over the Cuyahoga River and the Cuyahoga Valley National Park. They placed the devices and attempted to detonate them by remote control, officials say, and nothing happened. Except they got a tap on the shoulder at that point, I guess from somebody, and that was the end of that. I wonder what time that had. You know, these guys were dim enough where they probably could have had this being covered live on CNN and showing them pressing the button and watching nothing happen. Because that happened sometime in the last 24 hours. that they thought they were blowing up a bridge, and they weren't. Anyway, a member of Occupy Cleveland says that at least some of the five men arrested in the alleged bridge bombing plot attended the group's events, but that their actions don't represent the group. It's going to be hard for people to realize that. But it's really not that difficult a concept when you have a completely open membership. Occupy Cleveland media coordinator Jacob Wagner says the protest group had no knowledge of the alleged plan to blow up a bridge and would denounce such actions. He says some group members knew the suspects, but that the group isn't commenting any further. Authorities, of course, say there was no danger to the public because the explosives were inoperable and were controlled by an undercover FBI employee. And again, this all happened on May 1st. Perfect day to derail all attention that's being paid to the Occupy movement, all the demonstrations going on, because, well, the U.S. government has stepped in and prevented them from going too far. This strikes me a bit weird, a bit odd. All right, that's what's going on as far as all that. But there's other things going on, too. You know, I actually want to talk about sports a little bit. Because that's been in the news. Well, it's always in the news, isn't it? It's always in the news way too much. But this particular week was very interesting here in New York, because there was a switch on the FM dial yet again. We talked about this on Off the Hook for a couple of minutes last week, where the rumor had it, this was on Wednesday, the rumor had it that ESPN, the Entertainment Sports Programming Network, I believe is what that stands for, in case anybody has forgotten, they were planning on having an FM radio station in New York City, where previously one had not existed before. They I believe they have an AM station. I think it's at 10:50 AM. But they want better sound quality because, well, baseball games will sound great in hi-fi. But for them to get this station, someone had to lose a station. And, of course, everybody was concerned, who might that be? We were pretty sure it wasn't going to be WBAI. And the rumor had it that it was going to be that religious station. You know, the one run by Family Radio, the people who predicted the end of the world last year and didn't happen. And apparently, as a result, they have to get rid of a radio station. Or I like to think that anyway. But they are selling WFME 94.7. And the thought was that that's what was going to actually happen. The station was going to move there. Technically, that station is not in New York City. It's somewhere in New Jersey. But the signal comes in quite strong. Turned out, it was announced, I believe, the day after, on Thursday, that it wasn't going to be that station at all. It was going to be Kiss FM. The way they announced it, though, the way they announced it was really, it's memorable of something Pravda would do. They made it sound so good. Good news, everybody. Good news. Kiss FM and WBLS are going to merge. Yeah, the two urban radio stations on the FM dial are going to have a stronger voice now because they're going to be uniting. Unity, yeah, all that. And I don't think anybody bought that. It was funny how they tried to make it, put the positive spin on all this. But, you know, people aren't stupid. They said, well, wait a minute. If you're going to merge one radio station with another, 2 minus 1 is 1, that's half. We have half the radio stations then. We can't switch from one to the other. We have to stay on one. Obviously, not everybody who programmed both stations will make the switch. Basically, our format is being cut in half, and we're losing a radio station that's been on the air for over 30 years with the same format, or similar format in any event. And as it turned out, the station actually had a number of public service programs, call-in programs, religious programs, and things serving the community in addition to music. And whenever something like this happens, I always like to turn on the radio and listen to the last few days. But imagine, it was basically it's WRKS 98.7 to be told with less than a week that, okay, this is it. You know, you guys have been here forever, for decades, but got to wrap it up now in the next couple of days. And hearing the reaction to that, I mean, they had all kinds of highly professional promo-type sounding things saying, Kiss FM says goodbye to New York, things like that, that they took the time to put together. But they also had from-the-heart discussions and talks by the DJs and various other staff people. And those were really interesting to listen to, because more than ever before, the station became very relevant, because they started talking about things like the corporatization of the radio dial and how these mergers are hurting the community. I mean, how does ESPN radio in any way serve the local community? Yeah, people listen to sports games. Okay, great. You know, you had that ability before, but basically you don't have a local voice talking about a variety of topics. You've got a single monolithic voice, usually broadcasting nationally, but if not, only talking about one narrow focus of our culture. And yeah, it'll anger a lot of people, but sports is an extremely narrow focus. And I think the obsession with it is not healthy. And we have a real obsession with it in this country. I mean, other countries do as well. But come on already. I mean, when I was growing up, we didn't have an all-sports station at all. There was plenty of sports on the radio. You could listen to the games and hear reports and things like that. But the concept of introducing something 24 hours all the time, that was kind of strange. We saw it happen on television when ESPN signed on. And then you had MSG, and you had Sports Channel, and you had all kinds of other ones. And before you knew it, there were 20, 30 of these things. And now on the AM dial, I think there's no less than 3 of them in the same city. And now 1 on FM as well. Okay, you know, it's great. People want to hear this kind of thing. But sometimes you just get locked into one thing so much, whether it's right-wing talk radio, left-wing talk radio, although there's very little of that, sports, or a particular type of music that you only listen to this and nothing else. And you kind of get isolated from the rest of the world. So these were some of the things being discussed amongst various people. Sunday was their last day, and they had all kinds of crowded talk shows with everybody from the station seemingly in one room, going over the years, the memories, things like that, and some bitterness that they were losing their voices. Certain shows were not going to continue. Certain traditions coming to an end, popular traditions, valuable ones. Some people even urged a boycott of WBLS because other shows weren't being moved over there, and they needed to establish the importance of those voices. So yeah, they became very relevant in their last hours. Not saying they weren't relevant before, but they became more relevant then. And I think it would have been better had these discussions been going on all the time, because people are interested, and they do get it. But it needs to be available. It needs to be there for them to discuss. And so, yeah, at midnight on Monday morning, Kiss FM became history and ESPN took its place. Yeah, good news, as management said. And they do this all the time. It's really, they did the same thing when WQXR moved from their established spot at 96.3 that broadcasted the entire New York metropolitan area. And they moved to 105.9, was it? Yeah. Which was a very limited signal out of New Jersey again that barely hit Nassau County. Good news. Yeah, you're moving to a new frequency that, okay, there won't be commercials because it's being run by a public radio station now. But you're going to lose a good portion of your audience. And the frequency that you were at forever. And they did the same thing for that frequency as well, 105.9. When it was WNWK out of Newark, New Jersey, it was a station that people would lease time on. There'd be all kinds of different programs from different ethnicities, different kinds of music, things like that. And one day it was announced that station was going to be switching to, I believe, a Spanish format, which actually was the same thing that happened in WQXR. And all the folks at WNWK would be moving over to an AM station. I don't remember where the AM station was, but everybody on the air was saying, wow, this is great news. This is great news because instead of being on this station, which I just described as having a limited signal, we'll be on an AM station, which can reach all over the place. Well, not really. Not all AM stations reach very far at all. Some do. Some are clear channel stations. I don't mean the company. I mean the atmospheric condition that makes a station from New York listenable in Florida at night. But this was not one of them. This was a station that you couldn't barely hear after sunset. It got all garbled and horrible sounding. And not to mention the fact that a lot of these programs were music programs in the first place that sounded awful on AM, no matter how good the signal was. So no, it wasn't good news. And I don't know what happened to them. A few years later, I think it's all gone. I think they gave up on the AM. I think that turned into something else. So be wary. Be wary of these announcements that say everything's going swimmingly. It's not. And this particular case was interesting to hear. And yeah, you know, just got me thinking about the absurdity of people who take sports so seriously all the time. There's nothing wrong with getting into something and following the statistics and getting passionate about it. But man, there are so many people who increasingly it's their entire lives. You know, if you're an athlete, fine. If you own a major league team, okay. But if you just, you know, one of us common people trying to get by, it's one interest, but open your world up. There's all kinds of other things going on out there. To hear the debates going on about who's a better pitcher or what kind of penalty should be applied, it's basically with the same emotion as religious wars or ethnic wars or things. I guess it's better to pour all that energy into something that doesn't mean anything, except to a few people that are actually accomplishing the athletic feats. But wow, I just think better time can be spent doing other things as well. I'd like to read this story too, just to show you how absurd the whole thing is. The headline to the story is NBA Blue Chance to Send Message with Suspension of World Peace. Oh, you want me to say it again? I'll say it again. NBA Blue Chance to Send Message with Suspension of World Peace. What does that mean? Okay, well, let me explain. As the NFL prepares to level groundbreaking penalties on pay-for-headhunting players, and I don't know what that means, after the NHL dropped a 25-game ban on repeat offender Rafa Torres, the NBA on Tuesday handed a 7-game slap on the wrist to a player who has been suspended 13 times for a total of 111 games, who incited the ugliest riot in NBA history, who threw an elbow with the force of a sledgehammer at the head of James Harden on Sunday and showed no remorse after feeling his bones smack against the back of Harden's skull. Hey, NBA, pathetic. First, I understand there is precedent. I'm reading a column by this guy, Chris Mannix. Trevor Ariza got one game for swinging his elbow at DeMar DeRozan in 2009. Dwight Howard got a game for just missing Samuel Dalembert's skull with an elbow in the 09 playoffs. What's the capital of Texas? I wonder if he knows that. In fact, a 7-game elbow involved banishment is 3 times longer than any penalty the league has ever assessed. You know what? I don't care. You don't care. Well, I'm with you on that. But you do care. You really do, because you go on. This isn't any punishment for any player. This is Meta World Peace, one of the most penalized players in league history. Once again, letting his emotions get the best of him. Once again, endangering the career of another player. Once again, committing a violent act. History has to be taken into account, not ignored. NBA Commissioner David Stern has taken great pains to clean up the league in his tenure, slapping 7-figure fines on those using foul language with officials, tagging players with lengthy penalties for boorish off-the-floor behavior, and handing out 1 or 2-game suspensions for hard fouls like Skittles. Yet World Peace skates by with 7 games. Come on. Now, let me be clear. I don't think world peace should be banished forever. I don't want, you know, okay, I'm going to stop right here because the reason I'm reading this story, well, I mean, how many of you out there are listening to me read this and saying, what in God's name is he talking about? Why are they banishing world peace? Do you know there is a player whose name is World Peace? Yes, that is his name. He renamed it. He wasn't born that way. He was renamed himself World Peace. This guy is so intent on just the sports that he can't appreciate the irony. Not once in this entire column does he focus on the fact that this violent player, who he wants to be suspended for longer, is named World Peace. I mean, that just kind of shows how completely divorced from reality and alienated from everything you can become when you fixate on this. Now, maybe everybody in the world knows that there's a player called World Peace. I didn't. I was reading this for a good 5 minutes before I figured out what was going on. And it just, the headline really grabbed me. NBA blew chance to send message with suspension of World Peace. What does that mean? But, yeah, you know, sometimes you sort of have to let the rest of the world in on the jargon and inside jokes and things like that, even though this isn't a joke. This is apparently serious. But it's just another indication of how crazy the world of sports can be. You know, another thing that strikes me as crazy, NHL playoffs are going on right now, and this is just sad because all the Canadian teams, again, have been eliminated. Yeah, all the Canadian teams are out. Now, you might say, oh, well, you know, because they suck, that's why they're out. So, you know, the best teams go ahead. That's how it works. Yeah, you could say that, but then I could counter by saying that if you look at the lineup of any team in the NHL, you will see that it's something like 85% are Canadians. Maybe 5% are Americans, and maybe 10% come from the rest of the world. That's a pretty high percentage of Canadians. Don't you think it makes sense to have more of a Canadian presence? I was thrilled when Winnipeg got their team back. I was hoping that the Phoenix team, which has been bankrupt for the last couple of seasons, would quietly slink off into the darkness and move to Quebec next year, where they're building a new arena for an NHL team that they still haven't been assigned. But instead, Phoenix seems to be winning, and they might go all the way this year. And I don't think they're still selling out games, though. They'd rather put teams in deserts and places where ice never forms than actually put them in places where they're appreciated by people, where the names of every player will be known. You know, that kind of thing is, it makes sense. So, yeah, you have that disparity right there, which it bugs me. It bugs me that you've got teams in Florida and Nashville and Phoenix and places that just doesn't make any sense. And you can't be surprised when attendance is lousy. But Nashville. The Nashville team, they're called the Predators, the Nashville Predators. Who thought of this name? Who thought of this name for a team? Aren't Predators things we're supposed to be avoiding? You know? What are you doing there, Bobby? I'm watching the Predators on TV. I'm going down to a Predator game. It's the Predator van. I'm going to hop in. You know, it just seems like the kind of word you shouldn't use for something that's supposed to be attracting young people. Hats off to them for pulling it off, but I just don't know what they were thinking. Even without the connotation, it's still Predators isn't the best word to use. And there's all kinds of other unfortunate choices of nicknames, but we won't get into that. It's just a whole silly, wacky world of sports out there, and it's not looked at with humor nearly enough. It's just taken way too seriously. Okay, other things taken way too seriously, obviously, are politics. The latest thing, apparently, according to Fox News and the Washington Times, which is a right-wing paper down there in D.C., the Obama campaign is proving how left-wing they are, how allied with socialism and communism and things like that, because they dare to use the word forward in their campaign. Yeah, forward. Now, that's a word to be afraid of. And I could sort of see that from right-wing standpoints, that forward would be a threat. But because Forward has been tied to various Marxist organizations over the years, that must mean only one thing. According to this article, the Obama campaign apparently didn't look backwards into history when selecting its new campaign slogan, Forward, a word with a long and rich association with European Marxism. You know, I would expect this to be an Onion story, but it's real. It's real. This appeared in the Washington Times and on Fox News. Many communist and radical publications and entities throughout the 19th and 20th centuries had the name Forward, or it's the word, the foreign word for Forward. Wikipedia has an entire section called Forward, generic name of socialist publications. The name Forward carries a special meaning in socialist political terminology. It has been frequently used as a name for socialist, communist, and other left-wing newspapers and publications, the online encyclopedia explains. But you know what else is used? Words like justice. Words like freedom, even. Yeah. All kinds of words. I'll bet we could find words that the right wing uses all the time that have been used by left-wing organizations, by Marxists all over the place. I used to notice when I was in college, every single leftist group would use the word struggle in every single sentence. It made me laugh, actually. It wasn't very well put together. But I can guarantee you that other groups use that word as well. And it doesn't make them leftist by saying it. The slogan Forward reflected the conviction of European Marxists and radicals that their movements reflected the march of history, which would move forward past capitalism and into socialism and communism. What movement would not want to move forward? So what are we supposed to be saying, behind? What do you want exactly? What direction are we going? What direction are you going? I don't know. The Obama campaign released its new campaign slogan last Monday in a 7-minute video, which leads me to believe they said more than just the word Forward. The title card has simply the word Forward with the O having the familiar Obama logo from 2008. It will be played at rallies that mark the Obama re-election campaign's official beginning. And then they go into all these examples of when Forward was used, all the newspapers and magazines. They even have an East German football team. Their army soccer club had the word Forward in it in German. And Vladimir Lenin founded a publication with the Russian word for Forward. Conservative critics of the Obama administration have noted numerous ties to radicalism and socialists throughout Mr. Obama's history. You know, I'd like to see these ties. I don't see them. I think there should be more of those. It would be nice to have somebody in the mainstream have ties like that, but I don't see that. Maybe in his second term. Maybe he'll be a little bit more courageous, but I don't know. If guy uses his left hand to, like, throw a ball or something like that, he's going to be accused of all kinds of things. All right, you know what? Let's open up phone lines, because I've been doing a lot of talking. And the time is flying, as it always seems to. What we'll do is go into delay, right? I still know how to do this. And give out the phone number, which is 631-632- WUSB.
Hey, hey, this is Davy Jones from the Monkees, and you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook.
And we're back. And, you know, that was smooth. That was very smooth. I didn't even say we were going into delay. We just went into delay. Pretty cool. But, again, the phone number is 631-632-9872, or WUSB. And look, we have a phone call. This couldn't be working more smoothly. Good evening. You're on Off the Wall.
Good evening, Emmanuel Bosman from Bulgaria.
Here. Oh, so how you been? Haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I just came back to town today after spending a week in Zagreb, which was, oh well.
Oh, in Croatia.
I was offline, so I couldn't listen last week.
Uh-huh.
Well, I listened to the recording earlier today.
How are the folks in Croatia now?
I'm glad to hear you sounding better, and I guess you're feeling better than
I guess last week. You can't really hear me that well, though. Because how are the folks in Croatia doing?
Well, I was at a Eurocon convention, and it was great fun for 5 days until it ended, and then, oh well.
What's a Eurocon convention?
The European Science Fiction Annual.
Ah, okay. Well, that's good.
And did you hear about the ground-to-air missiles in London?
No. Should I be concerned about this?
Well, if you're going to the Olympics in London, you should be, because the RAF, I think, is going to be deploying ground-to-air missiles on.
You know, let me just say, ever since the Olympics were, and this goes back to sports, ever since the Olympics were announced in London, I knew it was going to be a chaos fest.
Well, they're going to be putting ground-to-air missiles in case someone tries to fly something into the stadiums. Uh-huh. On top of a water tower is where the missiles are going to be.
They didn't used to do this.
Better time for me.
Yeah, and you know, right now there's all kinds of conspiracies being led by the authorities to prove that this kind of thing is warranted. So that they can.
Well, the source for this is the BBC News site. So
yeah, well, I don't doubt it's happening. I'm just saying that we get ourselves into this this fixation of fear, and we get very disappointed if it doesn't happen. And we need to be reinforced. We need to be told that yeah, it is happening.
To benefit from it, I'm guessing.
I'm sorry?
I'm guessing it's not that we get into the fixation on fear, but people who are easily manipulated by people who benefit from it get feared into.
Oh, absolutely. A lot of us do get manipulated in that way. Most definitely.
Hey, I listened to the recording of last week's show today because I only got back to home today.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned you are going to have a follow-up for the asthma with the...
Yes, I have one tomorrow, in fact. In fact, I'm getting a whole allergy test, so I'll find out all the things I'm allergic to and all the people I'm allergic to and things like that.
Oh, well.
Looking forward to it. I still have a cough from last week. I don't want to talk about my health all the time, but I still have a cough from last week. But even with that cough, I'm still pegging the peak level meter. I don't understand this because I'm not supposed to be pegging it. You know, you blow into it.
Oh.
I'm supposed to go up to a certain level, and I'm hitting the top every time. So I'm going to ask that question, too, and find out just what's going on here.
Yep. All right. Well, have a good night, and thanks for a good show and from the IRC channel. And
all right. Well, give my greetings to the IRC channel.
Well, they're all listening in. So.
Okay. All right. Good to hear from you.
Same.
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off like that. Again, our phone number is 631-632-9872. As you can see, it works from anywhere in the world. So if you're not in this country, obviously country code 1. I say obviously because you must know that by now. Even if you weren't told, you'd have to experiment and find out who has country code 1. In actuality, it's not the country code of the United States. The United States doesn't have its own country code. We share it with Canada. Yeah, isn't that something? I think, you know, it would be great justice if one day Canada says, you know what, we're taking number one, you be something else. And then we'd be like, what? What's left? 8? 9? There are some things on 9. I don't know. We'd have to figure something out. I'd support Canada if they did that. They took some NHL teams and they took the country code. I think that's fair. Because, you know, we do too many stupid things. Get this one, all right? Arizona, yeah, I know. As soon as I say Arizona, but that's where a lot of this material comes from. Arizona lawmakers are on the verge to passing a bill that proponents say would stop a United Nations takeover conspiracy. Wait, it would stop a conspiracy? Yeah, I guess that's the right way to phrase it. The United Nations takeover conspiracy. Critics, however, claim it could end state and cities' pollution fighting efforts and even dismantle the state employment office. A final legislative vote is expected. I guess it was yesterday. I didn't hear what happened. This bill would outlaw government support of any of the 27 principles contained in the 1992 United Nations Rio Declaration on Environment and Development, also sometimes referred to as Agenda 21. Senate Bill 1507 was passed by the state Senate last month and received an initial House affirmation last Wednesday. It's sponsored by State Senator Judy Burgess, Republican of Sun City West, who also sponsored a state birther bill that was vetoed by the governor last year. The bill is designed to protect the rights of Arizona citizens and prevent encroachment on those rights by international institutions. That's what Burgess said. We have three branches of government, and when one branch preempts the process through executive orders, the balance of power is lost in the process. It is that simple. No more, no less. Well, you told us. God forbid that somebody give us some guidelines on how to reduce pollution. What an infringement of our rights that is. God forbid we agree with other nations on ways to do this. You know, kind of protect the whole world. At a March 15th hearing on the bill, Burgess said an executive order signed by then-President Bill Clinton in 1993 started the implementation of Agenda 21 after the Senate refused to pass a treaty ratifying it. Any way you want to describe it, I'm out of delay now, by the way, Agenda 21 is a direct attack on the middle class and working poor through social engineering of our citizens. I think they mean that in a different way, in every respect of their lives. House Minority Leader Chad Campbell, Democrat of Phoenix, has a different view. It's the most poorly crafted bill in this state. And that's saying something. It's so broad and overreaching, we're not sure what it could impact. Now, among the UN Declaration's non-binding principles, are calls for sustainable development, environmental protection, eradicating poverty, eliminating unsustainable production and consumption patterns, economic growth, and the participation of women in government decisions. All things that people in Arizona absolutely hate. Now, according to Campbell, we wouldn't be able to use CFL light bulbs in state buildings because that would be considered energy efficiency. Not Canadian Football League light bulbs, the. Campbell also said the state's Economic Security Department, which handles unemployment and welfare benefits, would be outlawed because it has to do with eradicating poverty. And Arizona universities have sustainability programs that could be banned if the bill becomes law. Arizona State University has a School of Sustainability. Northern Arizona University offers a master's in sustainable communities. And the University of Arizona has an environment and sustainability portal. So, yeah, according to Campbell, the Tea Party and conspiracy theorists run the state now. Interesting to see where it's going to go. But we're going to have to wait to see what happens in the weeks ahead because we're out of time now. You can write to us at otw@2600.com. And I have to say, not enough of you are doing that. We want to hear your opinions, whether they agree or disagree, and maybe some new topics as well. Because there are all kinds of things out there to discuss. And with that, we come to the end of this program. Hopefully I'm feeling better next week and be a little bit more upbeat. We'll see. Downbeat has its good points too, I guess. We'll talk to you later. Good night. Hey kids, Finn with you. Finn's Revolution until the 9 p.m. hour right here on WUSB. Stony Brook, it is May Day. There's going to be plenty of May Day-related music. Get out on the streets if you can. We're also going to be talking to Cindy Campbell about Julie Belafonte's new film and Stephen LaMarche about his new exhibition at Toast. Stay tuned.
motivation that is hanging up the goddamn nation. Looks like we always end up in a rut. Everybody now trying to make it real compared to what. Killing hoes, twisted children are killing foes, poor dumb rednecks rolling low, tired old ladies kissing dogs. I hate the human love of that stinking mud. I can't use it, trying to make it real compared to what. What it's for. Nobody gives us a rhyme or reason. Half of one doubt, they call it treason. We're chicken feathers all the way out one nut. God damn it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what. Sunday sleep and nod, trying to duck the wrath of God. Preachers filling us with fright. They all trying to teach us what they think is right. They really got to be some kind of nut. I can't use it, I'm trying to make it real compared to what.
Yeah, kids, as of right now, just to let you know, on Broadway, from Foley Square to Union Square, Broadway is completely occupied by protesters, despite police efforts to slow the march and stop transition of people from out of Union Square. So things are happening. If you are in the New York City area or can get there, you should head over there and show your solidarity with Occupy and this May Day, which is, of course, International Workers' Day. And definitely check it out. And we're going to have some people from Occupy on the phone very, very shortly. So stay tuned. In Paris a couple of weeks back, and here's a little something from the Style Council, but it sounds awfully a lot like the Jam. The Internationalists, right here.
You believe you have an equal share in the whole wide world, and all it bears, and that's your share. There's the less of my man, your fellow sisters, and your brother man. Take this knowledge and with it insist. Declare yourself an internationalist. Lay no blame at the feeling next door. Realize the struggle is also yours. And without the strength of a self.